It's always a pleasure to be back here in Hendersonville, where although Eileen and I were only members of this congregation for a couple of years, it always seems like our other home. So it's good to be here again. So welcome to 2017. How was your 2016? Some of you may have noticed that Citizen Times, the editorial page, said that we are saying goodbye to a 2016 that can fairly be described as horrendous. My daughter-in-law in Pennsylvania agrees. On December 26th, after singer George Michael died, she wrote on her Facebook page, "2016 can go to hell." In fact, most of my friends and acquaintances were glad to see 2016 go, with, of course, some reservations. 2016 was the year of the Zika virus, a year of increased racial violence. Each year we mourn the loss of some well-known people, and 2016 was no exception. For me, the names that come to mind are Leonard Cohen, Arnold Palmer, Debbie Reynolds, and Carrie Fisher. For a woman named Sherry Papini, 2016 will no doubt be remembered as the year that the young California woman was mysteriously kidnapped by two unidentified women. And even more mysteriously, 3 weeks later, simply released. It was the year of Brexit, and of course, the year of Donald Trump. For some people, 2016 may be remembered as a good year. Not all of us are depressed about it. A lot of people enjoyed what they saw in 2016. If you're a Chicago Cubs fan, first World Series win in 108 years makes it a good year. 2016 saw the passing of a new international climate change resolution. And a lot of environmentalists point to things like British Columbia's action to protect 85% of their rainforest by establishing the Great Bear Preserve. Peru and Bolivia agreed on measures to protect Lake Titicaca. In fact, it might be said that 2016 overall was a good year for our planet. We all tend to evaluate the year just passed on the basis of how things affected us physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. The way you look at the year will depend on what you remember, tend to remember, or want to change. For many of you, like me, the first worship service of a new year is often a time for, like the god Janus, looking forward and looking back. Looking back, letting go of the past. Looking forward, maybe making resolutions, or at least focusing some attention on the things we want to do to make our world better for the year ahead. On two occasions in past years, I actually handed out small pieces of flash paper and invited people to write something from the past that they wanted to get rid of. I stopped the practice after the second year because there were so many pieces of paper in the urn that when I lit them, the flame literally went more than halfway to the ceiling and almost set off the fire sprinklers. Instead of flash papers, though, this morning, I want to just take a few minutes to give you an opportunity to remember and feel what you want to share. Take a moment to recall now some of the events at any level, from personal to international, events that happened once or recurred more than once that you think you will always remember from 2016. They can be things you will be glad to forget, or ones that you want to hold on to. Got one? maybe more than one. So if you don't mind, just so that we get a sense of who's here this morning, and I'm not talking about the people with their name tags, I'm talking about what's going on. I'd like to take a little time to recall some of those things. And I'm going to start out by saying one of the things that I will always remember about 2016 is that it was the year when I decided to retire from the active Unitarian Universalist ministry after 14 years and 8 months in Hickory. Okay, so what was yours? Okay.
Our ninth grandchild was born.
Wow, good.
The wonderful, loving people I met in Japan.
I know there are more than three members.
Jan's dad's tumble down the stairway, he's carrying a television set, and a lengthy recovery.
Wow.
Coming back to America after 25 years.
Wow.
Her granddaughter got married to a New Zealander. Is happy. Yeah.
We could see from our home the party got fire. We're very concerned about moving closer and concerned for the people that were in F.
I started a new exercise program.
Good. It's a long story, but some of you know that the reason I first went to a UU church because Eileen dared me to. Any others?
As a caregiver and companion, I have the two clients and retired registered nurse that passed away pretty horrendously in situations.
Okay. Couple more, if there are. Okay. Now let's turn to Janice's other face and look forward a little. For some of us, looking forward seems like wishful thinking, but somehow the tradition of making New Year's resolutions continues into our culture and is stronger than ever. So this is a real-life reason, I think. And scientific studies have shown that the things we pay attention to, those things that we intend, our hopes, our wishes, are disproportionately likely to actually occur. So it's not a bad thing. President Abraham Lincoln and business guru Peter Drucker are both quoted as saying that the best way to predict the future is to create it. California computer scientist changed one word when he said that the best way to predict the future is to invent it. Sometimes the future is something that's already started in the past year. And sometimes it's something we envision as starting in the year ahead. As we look to 2017, we'll find the things that we paid attention to in our hopes and work can have a major impact on what happens in our lives. We can't control the future, of course, but we have a lot to say about who we are as we walk into that future. So, what is one thing that you intend to have happen in 2017? You don't have to call it a resolution if you don't want to, but maybe it's a good thing that you're going to work on and make happen in your life. One of the things that is happening for me is that I realize that I want to continue to make contributions, so I'm going to try to find a way to use my ministerial skills in some volunteer capacity somewhere. In a way, this is kind of like an extended Stones of Concern and Joy. So whether you'll build on something that's already happened or start something completely new, what is one thing that you are looking forward to make happen in 2017?
My next birthday.
Other clues in the
and if people like you are passionate about it. What else?
I like retirement.
Aha! You're finally going to do it, huh? Okay, all right.
I'm going to volunteer at the clinic.
Okay.
That my art room will be clean and organized.
That's a big wish. Anybody else? Okay. I'll bet there are a whole lot more, and I'll bet it'll be an interesting year around here. But what we have to do, I think, is to look at, we've already looked at what happened or what could happen, or what we want to put behind us, or what we intend to make happen in the year ahead. But I want to switch gears for a moment, because I want to take, as a religious, spiritual community, I want to take a look at the internal spiritual undergirding that it can take for us to make 2017 a good year. Most of you who've heard me speak before know that most of my sermons are directed toward one person, but you're more than willing and able, if you like, to listen in. Now, to do that, I want to take some time talking about hope. Paul said that faith, hope, and love abide, but it seems somehow it's a whole lot easier, particularly in churches, to talk about love and even faith than it is to talk about hope. We talk about hope on New Year's and we talk about hope on Easter, and that's about it. Maybe we get around to talking about hope at Christmas time. But mostly we talk about faith and love. But I think hope has equal weight and ought to be given equal consideration. Now, faith communities, religious communities, have talked about hope a lot, but I find most of those discussions less than inspirational in today's world. Conservative religious communities, particularly conservative communities of the religions of the book, have tended to talk about a promise for the future. Don't lose hope, they said, because after you die, you will what? Either go to heaven or be reincarnated as something else. That's your hope for the future. In any event, if you just hang in there, it'll be clear after you die. Isn't that great? Let's put hope on the shelf. Liberal thinkers have really tended to see it differently. Just make the world a better place, they've said, and sooner or later, everything will be better. And a new age will dawn. Experientially, we begin to learn that they may have been a little bit overly optimistic on a universal scale. Our UU hymn book contains a lot of hymns that talk about, oh, everything is going to be fine and wonderful and dandy. You know? Like, soon the day will arrive when we will all be together. Wait and see, wait and see. What a world this will be. But I think Porgy of Porgy and Bess had it right when he said, even here, it ain't necessarily so. In fact, says Rebecca Parker, who's a retired president of Star King School of Religion, it may not be so at all. In the world of today, she said, we need to see ourselves as people living in the aftermath of cataclysmic violence rather than as people awaiting the overthrow of the present world order and the birth of a new. We must see the world as it is, focusing our attention on the marks of past violence in our personal and collective experience. We must notice the breakdown, sorrow, and legacies of injustice that characterize our current world order. From this place of honesty, she says, we must discover how we can live among the ruins. Doesn't really sound like hope, does it? But is there some word that is hopeful that our faith can offer us today in this context? It may be that the word hope is confusing to many you use, perhaps even as confusing as the word God or the word salvation. I haven't come up with any better term than the word hope, however, so I'm going to keep using it for the next couple minutes. First of all, finding a hope to move forward into 2017 and beyond may mean discarding some old ideas. The old ideas of the hope of heaven or the hope of reincarnation may have some merit, and many people may find them of value. But for me, they are not helpful as I seek to live today and tomorrow. There is another idea that I think needs to be discarded. The idea that hope is, in some way, shape, or form, a synonym for optimism. To hope does not necessarily mean everything's going to be wonderful and hunky-dory in the future. There's something more, something deeper about hope. Pop psychology sometimes tells us to be optimistic. Two of the ministers who are going to be on the dais with Mr. Trump when he is sworn in as president are ministers whose gospel is, if you give God what he wants, he will make you rich. And of course, the third one is Franklin Graham, and I won't make any comment about him for those of you who live in this area. Optimism in this way, I think, is an attitude that if we just keep optimistic, some particular result will occur. It's something that we really want to have happen. God will make you rich. You will become rich. You will be healed. You will... maybe. Maybe not. And of course, if you don't become rich or healed or happy, there's something wrong with you, not with God. Now, I do believe that a positive attitude is a really good thing. Positive people are healthier and happier than negative people. It's been shown by study after study. Keeping a positive attitude, being thankful, being grateful, those are all things that can contribute to our life and health. But I also believe that holding on to the kind of hope that promises only the best possible outcome can and often does lead to huge disappointments. We may not stop the nuclear arms race forever. And if we hinge our whole hope on one thing like that, if that one thing doesn't come about, we can go into depths of depression. Hope needs to be resilient. Hope, like faith, must encourage us to move forward even when things go wrong. Hope is our ability to look squarely at the realities that confront us while remaining open to possibilities. In The Revolution of Hope, Eric Fromm observed that to hope means to be ready at every moment for that which is not yet born, and yet not become desperate if there is no birth in our lifetime. Those whose hope is weak settle for comfort or for violence. Those whose hope is strong see and cherish signs of new life and are ready every moment to help the birth of that which is ready to be born. If you want to help something good happen, something good will happen somewhere, and if you want to be part of it, be ready for it. The hope that can carry us forward into the years ahead is a hope that will come from the knowledge that everything is not yet finished. No, Donald Trump is not the end of the world. It's not done. That change is the only constant. things will be different. And that new things that will change who we are and what our experience in the world is are available. Hope, said Desmond Tutu, is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. But hope is not something that comes naturally. It is not just sit there on its own. You can't go out and pick the bird off the tree. It is in the past, the present, and the future, and is all wrapped up in two things that Paul also talked about, faith and love. There's an anonymous old saying that some have attributed to a poet named Jolly Wong, which makes me wonder if it's a real name. But I love the saying. It says, and it talks about this interrelationship between love and hope and faith. It says, love comes to those who still hope after disappointment. Love comes to those who still hope after disappointment, and who still believe after betrayal, and who still love after they've been hurt. We can enter the cycle of faith, hope, love, any point in the cycle, at any of the three points. If you Google how to find hope, and those of you who've heard me talk anytime during the last 5 or 10 years will know that I Google everything I preach on, so there it is. But if you Google how to find hope, you'll come up with several different lists of people who said, this is how you can do it. There's 8 things, there's 4 things, there's 6 things, there's 10 things. Take your pick. And if you don't like the one you pick, pick another one. But one that I did like particularly is one that was a list of things from BeliefNet. Any of you ever done the BeliefNet surveys about what religion am I? They're the most famous surveys on the internet. Is how do I know what religion I am? And they take you through a series of questions. Anyway, BeliefNet has a suggestion of 8 things that you can do to develop hope. So if finding hope seems like a good idea for you in the next 12 months, then here are a few of their suggestions. Number 1, be kind to yourself. One of the things that irritates my dear wife about me the most is when I do something really stupid and then cuss myself out for it. Every once in a while, she'll say, you know, be nice to yourself. Be kind to yourself. If I yell at myself for dropping a jar from the refrigerator, it will take me away from whatever peace and hope I'm moving toward. Being kind to ourselves makes it easier to love others, to express kindness to others, and out of that circle to find hope. The second thing they suggest, and this is a hard one for a lot of people who are activists, type A's, as I guess I used to be, I'm not sure. I don't know whether I am anymore or not. My high school graduation alumni reunion said that was the craziest idea I ever had, that I wasn't a type A anymore. But anyway, what we need to do, they said on BeliefNet, is to take time to make space in your life for silence. They suggest at least 5 minutes. Now, this is not necessarily silent meditation as we understand it. Eileen and I each have our own ways of meditating and spending time in the silence. And we both know that when one of us fails to make space for at least 5 minutes a day, and mostly more than that, it's going to have an effect on the tension in the room. Take time for silence. Here's the third thing that really hit me, and I was surprised to see it on the internet. Limit your intake of news. Now, during the last election, Eileen and I were news junkies. We'd watch BBC News and then PBS News and then Network News, and then we'd say, well, what's on MSNBC or CNN? And we'd go round and round and round until we were saturated, and usually, particularly after the election, depressed. Now, thank you, Donald Trump, but you forced me to stop watching so much news. And actually, it's better. It helps. It's surprising. We have some friends who don't even own a television. And they only intake news when they feel like they want to on the internet. So, people wiser than I guess, on BeliefNet have said, cut it out. Watching too much news takes away hope. It makes sense. It's logical because the news focuses on what happened. And then if you're lucky, you get a 2-minute segment at the end about good stuff in the world. So if you watch all that news, it takes away hope. Never thought of it, but go figure. Now, the rest of the suggestion includes things like make each day a special day. I remember when I was serving in a black church in Washington, D.C., I was so impressed because all of the deacons and the trustees and everybody who, the assistant minister, everybody who prayed in those services started their prayers by saying, God, thank you for waking me up this morning. You didn't have to. What a way to start a day. This is a special day that we've been given, a day that is like no other day that we've ever had before, and a day that is like no other day we'll have again. Another suggestion, be tangible in your expressions of love. Love is not what you feel, it's what you do. It's not, oh, I care so much about you, but this is what I mean when I say that. And giving gifts tangibly and expressing it tangibly. Recently, we've struggled with an illness of my wife's mother, and it's not so surprising. If she reaches March, she'll be 98. But she's had the worst health year of her life, and we've struggled with it. And one of the things that I found that was so important was for me to take the time and the place to make sure that our youngest two, Eileen's son and daughter, who are struggling with the death of their grandmother, know that I love them and care about them and trust them. Just something as simple as that. It's not a feeling. It's doing something about it. The last one must be exactly for you. The last one must be exactly for you because it says, be the peace you seek in the world. Put it inside yourself. Don't just sing it, live it. Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. Hope is there. And it can help us all live fuller, better lives in 2017. I would, however, like to add one more suggestion that was not on the BeliefNet list. It may have been on somebody's. A lot of you know the poet Adrienne Rich. Adrienne Rich was a feminist at a time when there were absolutely no women professors in the women's college she attended. She was a lesbian, and her father was a Jew. She struggled uphill all of her life because she eventually succumbed to the side effects of rheumatoid arthritis, which she began suffering as a young adult. But in the midst of all that struggle, I think she caught one of the most significant things that we all need, the need for community. The need for community. It's one of her shortest poems, page 463. It says, My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who age after age perversely and with no extraordinary power reconstitute the world. Choose your associations and your community on the basis of the people who want positive things to happen in the world. I wish you all community, love, faith, and most of all, hope in the year ahead.